Everyone, and welcome to this week's edition of Scouting the League. Excited to have Jimmy Noel on again, along with our regular Neil Stratton. You can find Jimmy on X at jnoel423. And of course, Neil is at Inside the League. I'm Roderick David. You can find me at RightStepADV. We're going to get into all sorts of stuff college football personnel related, if that includes the transfer portal, NIL. Obviously talk some Dylan Raiola talk, but before we get there, let's talk a little bit of NFL. Was another great game, weekend of games on the NFC side. We get the 49ers facing off against the Lions, and then over on the AFC side, we get to see the Chiefs against the Ravens. Interestingly enough, the number one versus the number three seeds on both sides of the bracket. What stood out to you guys on the four games we got to see this weekend?
Well, the Lions were impressive. I thought the Bucs were impressive. I really didn't expect them to make as much of a game of it as they did. And I got to tip my hat to Baker Mayfield, a guy that was really buried going into this season. And everyone kind of didn't even know if he'd win the job. And not only did he win the job, I mean, to me, he's in line maybe for a payday now. And I think Dave Canales gets a lot of credit for that. He's getting interviews for head coaching positions right now. And but I was impressed, but I love what Detroit's doing. I love their style of football, and you know, everyone loves the head coach's drama that kind of comes with him and going for a fourth and all those kind of things. That was pretty exciting. You know, the Ravens, I think, showed why they're the number one seed in the AFC, taking nothing away from the Texans given what they've done so far this season. They had a tremendous year. Niners hung tough. And I kind of rode the running game. And I think to me, to some degree, that's kind of the unsung part of their team. But the Packers have a really, really bright future. And, you know, I love what they're doing. And Jordan Love really impresses me. I think he has shown over the course of the second half of the season that he is the guy. And I think that the coaching staff at Green Bay gets a lot of credit for developing him, because I don't think coming out of Utah State, he was ready to do this kind of damage, but he has. And then the Bills, man, I really was kind of surprised they couldn't close the deal. I thought they really had that game and had made a couple mistakes, got bailed out by the fumble in the end zone, and but still couldn't make it happen. And so I was a little surprised that Casey could come through on the road like that. I think the Ravens still go. Sneak peek on our, I guess, spoiler alert on our picks later. But, you know, the Chiefs are resilient, and their defense doesn't get as much credit as they probably deserve.
And, they know how to win, don't they?
They do. Mm-hmm. They, one way or another, they figure out a way. So, you know, it sets up for a great weekend, and I'm looking forward to the games.
Yeah. Jimmy, what'd you think?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I came away impressed this weekend. I mean, especially with Kansas City's offense. They've kind of been up and down this year in terms of offensively, a little bit of a roller coaster. But, I mean, that offense was humming in that Buffalo game. And that's probably the best that they've looked all year, and it came at the right time, you know what I mean? And defense buckled down in the second half, made the adjustments that they needed to against Buffalo, because, I mean, Josh Allen was playing great football. As far as the San Francisco and Packers game, I mean, Neil, you hit it right on the head. I mean, Green Bay has got a lot to look forward to with Jordan Love now that they untapped his potential. They've tapped into his potential. And so, I mean, it was exciting watching that game. I guess once we get into it later on in the show, in the podcast, we can kind of talk about the San Francisco Lions matchup and who the great equalizer will be, and where we think the weaknesses and strengths for each team will be in terms of who comes out on top. But, I mean, I think we have a great weekend of football coming up ahead. And just this past weekend, we saw great football, so it was exciting to see.
Yeah. I mean, it's really interesting looking at, again, for me, I start comparing a little bit of where teams started and where teams end. The Chiefs, everyone expected them to be here, but it was not an easy season for them. Obviously, up, down, their wide receiver group has been a little bit all over the place with expectations, with performance. But, you know, Jimmy, you said it, again, they've built for these – basically 3 weeks, and, you know, or hitting it one week at a time. And when you've got a, you know, Hall of Fame head coach, when you've got one of the best quarterbacks in the league, you can, you know, you can kind of pick and choose maybe some things that you're going to do differently during the season, knowing that it's about, you know, getting to the final seven in your conference and then playing from there. That's what the Chiefs remind me of. They're a team that, hey, yeah, I'm not going to say sleepwalk through the regular season because you can't do that in the NFL the way you can maybe in some of the other sports leagues. But, again, they're playing their best football now. Green Bay, in a different way, is kind of like that team too, where they are playing – they played their best football down the stretch. They were a team that looked – their O-line was a mess early in the year. Jordan Love was not looking this good. Their weapons were not, you know, making plays at the beginning of the year. But I give huge credit to Goody up in the front office and Coach LaFleur, who I was hard on early in the year, again, playing their best football late in the season. Again, some of that may be more experience, getting that team meshed, getting some guys healthy on the front line. But again, both those teams have really built for the postseason and built on top of everything else. You've got your 49ers and Ravens, your one seeds, who, again, everybody expected them to be here and just kind of rolled along. They get both dealt with some injuries. Again, quarterbacks, you talk about different expectations of those quarterbacks. Lamar was 100% Lamar. Like, he was special this last weekend, and he has to be. Brock, on the other hand, Brock's got to play better if they want to beat the Lions this week. I fully believe that. He is a talented leader. He's got just enough arm talent to do what Kyle wants him to do, I think. There were some throws that he left on the field that I think he's got to hit if he wants to beat the Lions this week. And then, you know, you've got obviously, if you're Houston, you're really looking forward to the future. If you're Green Bay, you're really looking forward to the future. If you're Tampa, again, it's a little bit more of a reset. Again, we hit on a lot of the Baker stuff. Again, if he's not back in Tampa, I'd be surprised. He's going to make some money, be given a chance. Again, expectations for a former number one overall. Again, I think at this point we know who Baker is. The Bucks know who Baker is, and you can win a lot of football games. Maybe be the team in that division that should run it for a couple of years. But all really good things, a lot of really fun things. Again, you talk about quarterbacks. Again, there you've got four quarterbacks that are going to have the chance to put their team over the top and do it in a lot of really different ways between Mahomes, Goff, Purdy, and Jackson. So it's going to be a fun weekend of football games. We'll get to predictions on both of those. Staying in the NFL, we got two new GMs tabbed this weekend. Dan Morgan, a Panther draftee back in the first round of the 2001 NFL draft, spent nearly a decade in the league before jumping into personnel, stints with both the Seahawks and Bills before coming over under Scott Fitter as the assistant GM in 2021. He takes over the reins on a team that's still looking for a head coach, I believe. And then out on the West Coast, Tom Telesco stays in division, was fired along with head coach Brandon Staley during the year. Tom gets right back in it to work with Antonio Pierce and the Vegas Raiders. Thoughts and impressions, both of those hires. Neil, let's start with you.
Well, I was really surprised about the Telesco hiring. I think a lot of people were. I know that I've reached out to several members of the Raiders scouting staff, and they had no idea this was coming. A little disappointed. I think they had some loyalty towards Champ, and I can understand that. But, you know, you have to understand, Champ was sitting in on the head coaching interviews. I mean, I know that he was the interim GM, so that's kind of his role. But at the same time, I think he had a reason to feel like he may have had the inside track. And for Telesco to come in there at the end, again, was just surprising. Champ's a friend of mine, and this is not the last we've heard of him. He excels on the pro side especially. He's an assistant GM for a reason. And that's not taking anything away from Telesco. I don't mean to be disrespectful to him, of course, but it was a surprise, and I think a lot of people are surprised. Now, as far as the staffs, it's a little interesting. They have 24 scouts on staff with the Raiders. I think the Chargers have one of the smallest staffs. I think they had 15. So I think we could see some shrinking of staff, especially if Telesco wants to bring some people with him. I would be surprised if JoJo Witten doesn't get. Let me back up. The interim GM at with the Chargers right now does not get the full time role, and I expect that he will if Harbaugh comes in there. Then I expect he will go to Las Vegas with Telesco, and I think also Tyler Lyon, who's the assistant director of pro there, highly regarded. I know he's highly regarded by Telesco. I would expect he'll go as well if they, you know, in some, perhaps even a DPP role, especially if JoJo doesn't go. So that's kind of my take on that. I think it's really interesting. Everything that I get back, I don't know Tom Telesco personally. Maybe you do, Roger. Maybe you do, Jimmy. But my understanding, quiet, more of a numbers kind of guy, more of an analytics kind of guy. I know a lot of people have trashed him for the head coaching hires and maybe some of the free agent signings. But to me, I think he did his job, especially hitting on the first rounders over the past, what, I don't know how long he's been there, 10 years or what have you. So I think drafts well, probably will need a few mulligans on the free agent side. And, you know, the head coach is already done for it. So from that standpoint, I think it's the hire makes sense, again, even though it's surprising.
Yeah. Yeah. And I agree with that. I mean, I was kind of blindsided by the Tom Telesco hiring, but I mean, I've never met him. And so I can't really say anything bad about him. I mean, all I can say is he's done great work when he was the Chargers GM. He's brought in a lot of talent. And he's had, for the most part, he's been pretty good with the cap in terms of re-signing players and that kind of thing. And so, I mean, it'll be an interesting dynamic just because you always want to make sure if you want to have a successful organization, you want to make sure that the GM and head coach are on lockstep. You know what I mean? And so when Champ was there, I've only met Champ one time, and that was a few years back at an event, and he seemed like a great dude. And so it just looked like Champ and I'm blanking on the name.
Coach, Antonio.
Antonio. Yeah, sorry. Thank you, guys. Antonio Pierce. They just look like they're on lockstep. I mean, towards the stretch of the season when it comes to bringing guys in and helping the players in terms of winning the football games and that kind of stuff. So you just want to make sure that your GM and your head coach are on lockstep in terms of what the vision is for the organization. And so, I mean, will it work between Telesco and Antonio Pierce? That remains to be seen, but it'll be an interesting dynamic.
That lockstep again, both you guys said it again, the Telesco hiring. I went back. I don't think I see any crossover in Telesco's and Antonio Pierce's background. I could be wrong. Maybe there is a stint where they've gotten to know each other, but again, head coach GM have got to be on the same page, especially in my opinion, in Antonio Pierce's situation. Again, I have not been shy about saying I don't have high expectations for what Antonio Pierce is going to do as a head coach in the NFL. Again, I go back, I think about things I have heard in his time at Arizona State, things I've heard about in Vegas under Coach McDaniels. Obviously a mess of a situation that happened there. Obviously, the players really like him and are playing hard for him right now. But again, that is just a small element of what a head coach has to be able to do. If you're that head coach that only wants to focus on the field, you better have a GM that, again, is 100% on the same page for you, for coaching staff, for other people in the building, for the way you're going to operate. And again, we all are sitting here. We thought that was Champ. Again, the way it looked like down the stretch, again, was sitting in the room when the interviews were happening. We thought that was Champ. So Tom coming in there again, Tom had a good roster. Again, the three hardest positions to find your franchise guy, edge rusher, left tackle, quarterback. I would say that, you know, the Chargers are in good shape for a long while at all those spots. So again, maybe the fringes of the roster weren't quite where they needed to be, or it truly was just a head coach that needed to change and the Chargers are going to be the best team in that division. Again, I don't think they're that far away, but again, that lockstep is going to be really interesting to see how that shakes out. And then again, you add all the different elements of, hey, who are both guys going to bring in? Are there going to be big silos built between personnel and coaching? It's going to be an interesting situation. Then you've got to throw in the fact that there is a fairly active owner in Mark Davis out there, and you've got three people in the building, three people in the kitchen trying to get their hands in the pot and kind of stir it up. So we'll see it. We'll see it there on the, you know, going out to the Panthers now. again, Dan Morgan, a guy who I have done a number of school visits with, have done a bunch of pro days. Excited about this one. Again, the question now becomes, can Dan Morgan look down the barrel at the owner and tell him, no, we're doing it this way? That's the question. What do you guys think?
I'll go first, Jimmy. I was pleasantly surprised that Dan was hired because, you know, the people that Tepper looked at originally, and we've discussed this previously on this podcast, were all cap guys and analytics guys. And Dan is a classic traditional football guy and came from, you know, Scott's regime. So I was a little surprised that he got the job. Again, yep. Pleasantly surprised. I think he can do the job. I think he's been caring for this for a long time. I know he has worked to kind of shore up his cap limitations or understandings or whatever that is. I can personally attest to that. So I think he's ready for this. I think he's been waiting for this for a long time. I'm excited that he got the opportunity. I'm excited that a football guy got the job. No disrespect to the others that interviewed, but I think it's a good thing. You know, I think they're going to need some patience there. Yep. And I don't know if that's David Tepper's strength or not, but they're going to have to wait and give Bryce Young a little bit more time to develop. And a lot of that's going to depend on who the new head coach is and who the OC is and all those kind of things. And patience is not something a lot of people have in large supply around the league. But I think if they'll give Dan some time, I think it was the right move. And I think it's going to reap rewards for him.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I actually like this hire for Carolina. You know, I mean, he was in Buffalo before, like you guys mentioned, and he was a brand to me, and obviously a skillful evaluator. And you know what? I mean, Dan's a Carolina guy. He is a Carolina legend. And so what you're trying to do is you're trying to regain the fan base. So what better way to do it than bringing in somebody who knows the organization, who knows the fan base? And I think, with that being said, you're going to get back some of those fans and restore that faith in that program in terms of what you're doing, saying, hey, listen, we've got Dan Morgan. He's very good at what he does. He's going to bring in skillful people. I mean, I've already seen reports that they're bringing in one of the top cap guys in the league over in Kansas City, who I know pretty well. And so, you know what I mean? They're going to give Dan every reason for him to be successful. And like I said, just bring the fan base back on board, just having them believe again. That's going to take them a long way. And obviously the development of Bryce Young and getting the coaching staff together and having the head coach in place. I think they're heading in the right direction. And I think the first step in that right direction was hiring Dan Morgan.
Hopefully the drink incident that David Tepper had late in the season, again, if we've all seen that YouTube video, maybe the right word would be humbling. Again, David Tepper has made a lot of money in his career, and he hasn't done it all by himself. He's at different spots. There's no question he has listened to good advice. He has hired good people. He has made good business decisions. Again, you said it, bringing in a Carolina guy, Jimmy. That is really smart, in my opinion, because not just – again, it was really easy for the other 31 teams to hate the Panthers the way the owner was acting. You don't want your fan base hating you as well. So, again, hopefully the decision was made for the right reason, that Tepper is going to give him some leash, going to have some patience, going to let him, you know, work to do the right things to get this franchise back. Because, again, as we're all saying, you know, I can't think of a reason, you know, outside of anything that would be normal, that Dan Morgan can't succeed and, you know, is going to need some time and some patience. But again, they have the number one overall quarterback, the quarterback that, you know, you can make the argument 32 teams would be happy to have him on their roster. So, you know, start to build around him. Very excited. Know some good people up there. I expect there to be some changes in Carolina. Again, it's a very interesting scouting staff, dynamic-wise. You know, you've got people kind of all over the spectrum, players age-wise. Again, people in kind of different spots in their career, so it'll be interesting to see what shakes out there. But two GMs that we'll certainly keep an eye on, and I'm sure they'll be busy and active over the next couple of weeks. If anybody has a chance to see them at any of the All-Star games, that'd be fantastic. But again, they'll have – lots of internal work to do before they can even start thinking about anything external. So they'll be busy and tied up, and just, you know, obviously for both these guys, wish them all the success. But let's get into the meat of today's program. That is college personnel. Things have, without question, changed since the NCAA both allowed NIL and opened up, you know, essentially free migration via the transfer portal. Obviously, we've, you know, Neil hit on some of the good things that have come with both of those aspects, but it has created a lot of headaches across the sports world. Just look at what has happened to Alabama's roster since the legend and the GOAT has stepped down, even with a really good coach and Kalen DeBoer coming over. Again, we already talked again a few weeks back on our podcast about the need for NFL teams to tear down some silos to deal with all these guys jumping ship, moving around, again, getting the deeper information on these athletes. But today we're really going to lean into Jimmy. We're going to talk about what he's doing at Nebraska, how they're navigating the personnel side, and really, you know, where we think it's headed ultimately. So, Jimmy, let's jump in. Let's start with what specifically or generally are you doing personnel-wise with the Nebraska Cornhuskers?
Yep. So right now I'm just working remotely out here in Connecticut, just helping out Nebraska with some West Coast recruiting, just watching high school prospects are out on the West Coast, say from California to Washington, Nevada, Montana, that kind of thing, and just making cut-ups and evaluating the prospects for them. And so once I'm done with those, I'll send them into home base over in Nebraska, and then they'll kind of do their thing with what I do. So really it's a collaborative effort, and I think Nebraska's got a pretty good deal where they've got some remote workers just kind of helping out with the recruiting, that kind of stuff, just getting out ahead for the 25, 26, 27 class. Once the 24 class is done, I mean, I know we have the final signing day coming up in the next week or so, next Wednesday. So we want to make sure that we jump out ahead and making sure that we know who all the prospects are for the younger classes are.
Good. So is it an NFL style evaluation that you're submitting, similar to when you were a Northeast scout? Are you submitting it in for the coaches and personnel directors, or is it more of a, you know, tiered system for, hey, this is a five-star kid's a five-star kid, or no, this kid's not as good as his stars say? Are you paying attention to that?
No, not so much paying attention to the stars and that kind of stuff. I mean, what I'm doing now is just, I'm giving a list, making a cut up for those guys. I mean, similar to a point of attack tape, what we do in the NFL, you know what I'm saying? Showing some good, showing some bad, just trying to depict, the big picture of what this player can do and how we can help the Cornhuskers at the end of the day. So it's not more so like the NFL where you're writing reports and that kind of thing. You're just trying to put clips together. To where the coaches and the personnel staff have an idea of what type of player this is and how he's going to help the Cornhuskers.
Good. So you're looking out, again, at this point, you're thinking 25 and 26 recruiting classes. Again, we've seen now Alabama, their top recruit in 2024, I believe, is now following Coach O'Brien up to Ohio State. And obviously Nebraska is stealing Georgia's top recruit, Dylan Raiola. How does that dynamic of anything could change? He could be committed to us for the next year and a half, and any small thing changes, and again, he jumps ship. How does that affect your recruiting? Does it affect your recruiting? And how are you guys kind of dealing with that?
You know, you always have to be mindful with recruiting, just because you never know. If a player has a really good first year, I mean, there's always going to be NIL opportunities from other schools that come calling, you know what I mean? And you don't want to say it's a tampering deal, but it's college football and it's the NFL, that kind of thing. So what you want to do is you want to make sure that you keep those guys committed to the program with whatever you have to do. You know what I'm saying? I know Dylan Raiola was a huge prospect for us, was a huge get for us. And you want to make sure that you maintain that relationship to him, making sure that you're committed to him. Hey, he's going to be our guy for the next 4 to 5 years if he lasts that long. I mean, he might be a guy who lasts 3 years and he's off to the NFL because he's that talented. You know what I mean? So you just want to make sure that you have his mind at ease in terms of what you're doing with him and how you're going to progress him as a player.
So you've got college athletes, again, thinking at the beginning in terms of four-year contracts. Again, they're not contracts. Obviously, a scholarship's not a contract. Guys are going to schools. NIL is not technically a contract. Now, again, depending on who you ask and what they're signing and who all is involved, maybe something happens behind the doors. Again, guys are getting paid to use their name, image, and likeness. It is not pay for play, which means it is very hard for schools to, you know, on the flip side, hold players and players' camps accountable to anything they have agreed to signing up at all these schools. Again, that's one of the great frustrations. Again, you start comparing it with coaches. Coaches do have stipulated contracts. If they back out and move, again, they're going to have to pay penalties, or they're not going to double dip, or unless you're Jimbo Fisher, you can double dip or triple dip, or, you know, get paid 18 different ways. College athletes, it's not the same. What level of, again, oversight, getting the Senate, getting the government involved is the worst idea, but the NCAA is clearly not capable of managing it right now. What are some of the biggest frustrations or headaches that either you've seen or you've heard about, again, working on the college personnel side, that that's like, hey, if we just got this situated in a little bit different way, it would be better for college football?
So I just because I've heard so many stories in terms of trying to have a player stay committed to their program. Like I mentioned, it's the NIL deals are there's always going to be opportunities for those guys. I now obviously me being at Army and then me being not so much with the Nebraska program now being in the office every day, but you can kind of just see it from afar and just even reading about it that about 15, 20 years ago, when a kid signed on the dotted line for their national letter of intent, it was a 4-year commitment. You know what I mean? Now it's more so progressed towards a 1-year commitment. So where it's, hey, listen, coach, I'm probably going to be here for 1 year. And after that, who knows what happens. And so I think coaches have gotten accustomed to that. Now, do they like it? Probably not, because every year you're turning over a new leaf in terms of trying to find players. And that can get frustrating as a coach. But you kind of understand it because, I mean, with the NIL stuff, I mean, it's life-changing money for a player and his family. You know what I mean? And so that's where a little bit of frustration lies in terms of just keeping those guys within your program, trying to build some cohesiveness within the program, making sure that guys are on the same path and have the same ideals, and that kind of thing. So, listen, it's a slippery slope with NILs and coaches having to try to keep their kids within their programs and not having all these players transfer. So in terms of what the NCAA can do, I guess it remains to be seen what they can do. But right now, it's a lot to take in and to chew on with the transfer rules, the NIL rules. It's because I think it was Florida State that got hit with a recruiting penalty. Was that it?
Yeah. One that you scratch your head at based on, you know, first getting left out, and now we're going to hit you with these sanctions based on, you know, stuff that you hear across college football, that, you know, and they really have it out for the Seminoles right now, it seems like.
It's a tough deal for the Seminoles. But, I mean, it's probably going to get to the point where all those P5 schools, I mean, kind of go out and do their own thing outside of the NCAA. You know what I'm saying? You want to make sure that you benefit the players. Just because, I mean, this year, I mean, what was I saw something last week where the NFL draft, the number of early entry participants dropped dramatically. I think it was like 55 players into the draft.
I heard the number was 44. I should know this, but it is. I mean, that's radical. That's about 100 players less than what you normally would get.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? And that's, I mean, I don't want to say it's like this for every scenario, for every kid, but it's monetary driven. You know what I mean? Like these guys don't have to enter the NFL draft early to take care of their families. Now they're making money off of the NIL deals in college while finishing up their degrees and while still developing, you know what I mean? And so it's benefited the kids, but I just think there are some areas where it can improve, where it helps the program and the kid.
You hit on that development. Go ahead, Neil.
Go ahead. Well, Jimmy, with respect to how you do your job, how much of your job is evaluating high school players and how much is it involving evaluating the portal guys and that kind of stuff?
So I do nothing with the portal guys. I more so just evaluate the high school guys.
Okay.
I keep the mental note in my head, and then I put the cut up together and then I send it over to them. If I have anything to say, I'll kind of speak with someone about it. But they're not asking me to do a lot, but I just watch a lot of players, and it's something I'm accustomed to doing. You know what I mean? And so the difference between an 18-year-old kid and young man and a 23-year-old young man, I mean, it's drastically different in terms of their physical development and their skill set. And so you can kind of get a glimpse of in terms of what guys you think are ready to play at the college level, as opposed to what guys you think need a couple of years of development.
Now, Jimmy, that you hit on, that was going to be my next question, actually. When you were evaluating for the Browns and Chiefs, you're more or less seeing a guy that I don't want to say is necessarily a finished product physically, but most of the growth in the bone structure, that kind of thing, is done. When you're talking about a 17 or 18-year-old kid, that's not at all true, and you may see a lot more of that. Are there things you look for to say this is a guy that may become someone who's physically dominant? We just haven't seen it yet. Is there a way to know that, or is it all just kind of guesswork?
To be honest, it's tough. I mean, if you're evaluating a high school prospect, you want to see how good of an athlete he is. I mean, you're not going to get guys who are big, fast, and strong at the high school level who can play football. So what you're doing is you're going to be intrigued by those 10 tangible skill sets, and kind of project them to see how he's going to fit in the program. Like you said, it's so hard to determine what a kid's going to be in 3 years from now. You know what I mean? But if he can play the game of football, he can play the game of football. We just have to get him into our program. We have to get him on our meal plans and in our weight room program and that kind of stuff, just to kind of see how he develops. But when you take these guys on, if they're not the surefire deals like Dylan Raiola, it's hard to say because you don't know what they're going to be in 3 to 4 years. Mm-hmm. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah, the word development keeps coming up. And again, that's one of those ones, again, especially from an NFL perspective. Again, the fact that the numbers are so down for early enrollees, again, not a bad thing, maybe not a good thing. Again, it's just kind of the reality that, again, some of these mid, again, you're probably talking mostly day two, day three, really day three, the bulk of them guys are staying, going to make some money, hopefully going to develop. But that's where the transfer portal comes in. And one of the things that just because you stay in college for another year doesn't mean you're going to develop more, especially if you're hopping programs. Again, Nebraska is going to have as many resources as anybody. You've got your P5 that you are set at those, again, meal plans, people to take you through specific workouts, to do some specific stuff that you need to get to that next level. You get outside of P5 and the development may not be there. And then going from maybe an FCS level to a P5, you've got a big transition. The training regimen is going to be the same. You're getting used to a new school, a new staff, a new way to do things. The development is going to hit a little bit of a speed bump for most players. And then again, you start talking about the on-field where, you know, you're getting blitzed through a playbook. That way you can play, again, depending on when you transfer. We're going to have a bunch of players that probably transfer at the end of spring ball, when they see the depth chart and all of a sudden realize they can't play. So now they've got 2.5 months in the summer to try to get used to a new program, new coaching staff, get used to a new playbook. The development is going to maybe in some situations hit a brick wall. Are you guys concerned, you know, especially when we see players that are now at 3 major P5 schools, now they're hopping into the draft. Again, I would automatically have a question mark on, all right, where is this player at in his development? And is what's it going to be like coming into our NFL program where hopefully he's going to be here for a while? What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, obviously right now I can't say for Nebraska as a whole, but I could give you my personal piece. It's tough when you get a guy that's been to three different schools, just because you don't know what he's accustomed to doing. Just because you want to make sure that you try to put him in the best position, and in order for you to do that, you need to spend some time with him and have a relationship with them. Now, obviously, there are guys, if they transfer two to three schools, they probably did have a prior commitment, a prior relationship to the coach. And that's the reason why they end up transferring to all those places, just to follow the coach. You know what I mean? So the player is going to be accustomed to the coach's playbook, his philosophies, that kind of thing. And so there are some cases where you get some guys that transfer just because of the coach. He wants to go play for the coach, and the player feels like the coach can put him in the best position in order to be successful. And then there are obviously other guys who probably just need to change the scenery. You know what I mean? And so there's a lot of different stipulations and changes that can happen and what players need in order for them to be successful. But, I mean, it's not going to slow down anytime soon, especially with all these players essentially being on one-year contracts and the NIL money comes calling, that kind of stuff. So we'll see. We'll see.
It is not changing anytime soon. If the NCAA needs a little three-man panel to help come solve some problems, we're all here. Again, you can look us up and find us on X. One of the great things that maybe we'll see it balance back out. Again, as soon as Quinn Ewers, you know, said he was headed back to Texas, again, something down the stretch everybody was expecting. Again, Arch Manning, it looks like, is choosing to stay. Again, Arch Manning, maybe you want to say the situation's different. Still a really talented kid that's going to be a good quarterback, I fully expect. Him staying at Texas is good for college football. Again, Sark is going to go from one really good quarterback to another, I think, really good quarterback. Now, they had the other kid that played some, chose to hop in the portal again. That's where it makes sense. Again, you've got Dylan Raiola, who's going to go to Nebraska, hopefully suited up and play. You've got a guy like Julian Sayin going from Alabama to Ohio State. So you've got some good quarterbacks that hopefully get into situations where they can develop. Again, quarterback, obviously, always in a unique situation. You've got really talented players that, as maybe true or redshirt freshmen, are going to be playing football. Dylan Raiola, you've looked at film on him. What do you think he does special that's going to allow him to come in? And again, I'm expecting him to be the signal caller week one for Nebraska. Maybe I'm wrong. What does he show trait wise on film that gets you excited for him, Jimmy?
You know, when I watch Dylan, now I don't, when I say this comp, I don't want it to, for people to get gung-ho about this, but I mean,
we're getting them excited. Here we go.
Yeah. You know what? When I watched his tape, he had a lot of the same mannerisms as Patrick Mahomes, where a lot of the off-platform throws, that kind of feels arm strength. And so I saw a little bit of Patrick Mahomes when I watched Dylan, and he is a fun player to watch. Now, he goes up against really good competition out in Buford. I mean, Buford High School is a high school program that produces Division I athletes year in and year out, and I'm talking P5 kind of guys. And so obviously the local area in terms of the high schools, I mean, he's playing against really good competition every single year. So that's exciting to see that he's able to put up those kind of numbers against that kind of level of competition. But I mean, I'm excited to see what Dylan does. Obviously Nebraska's home for him, with his dad going to Nebraska, winning a lot of accolades there, and his uncle being the offensive line coach now in Nebraska. So I think he's going to fit right in. I think he's going to work his tail off as if he's never been to Nebraska before, and he's got a whole bunch of people to prove. I mean, I think he's going to come in. I think he's going to work his tail off. Now, is he going to be given the starting job day one? No. And that's what Coach Rule does. He makes sure he keeps those guys accountable. Nothing's going to be given to you. You're going to earn everything if you're going to play for him. And that's one of the things I love about Coach Rule. It doesn't matter who you are. You're going to come in. You're going to work. And you're going to earn everyone's respect, not just the coaches, but your teammates as well. And so I'm excited for the kid's future and to see what he can do. I mean, just because, I mean, he's got an immense amount of talent.
Did he play in the kind of offense that mirrors what he's going to see in Lincoln?
What was that?
Did he play in the kind of offense in high school that mirrors what he's going to see in Lincoln?
You know what? I think with Nebraska bringing in Glenn Thomas, who we worked with at Temple, and Matt Rhule has a relationship. I mean, being with that Baylor and that kind of thing, I think they're going to put an offense together that fits Dillon's strengths. You know what I mean? And so it looks like Buford did a good job of utilizing his strength over Buford. I mean, I know he had a lot of talent on that offense as well, but I think, I mean, they're going to do whatever they can in terms of making sure that Dillon's successful with the show. I'm pretty sure they're going to say, hey, listen, what are some things that you felt comfortable doing at the high school level? And you think that can translate here? So I think they're going to stick with their traditional offense with the fullback and that kind of thing. But I think it would be a little bit more pass game stuff, because when you have an offensive talent like that, you want to make sure that you utilize it to the best of your ability. So I think you get a little bit more drop back, but you also don't want to put too much on his plate with him being a freshman, just because you don't want to hurt his development in his first year. So I think they're going to try to little by little put some stuff on his plate just to make sure that he gets the grasp of the offense in the college game before they unleash him and let him go do his thing. So,
mm-hmm. Okay. Cool. Again, you hit on it, the Nebraska roots. For those people that, again, and I would say it's a large contingent nationally, that don't understand what Nebraska football once, what it once meant, again, Nebraska football in the state of Nebraska and in the Midwest is something special. It's good for college football when Nebraska's good, and I'm really excited to have Nebraska as part of the national conversation again. Again, hopefully it's not just on the recruiting side. Hopefully Coach Rhule gets them winning games again. But it also appears that Coach Rhule seems to be the right guy. Again, the refreshingly candid Matt Rhule comes out postseason and says, you want to transfer portal quarterback, it's going to cost you $1.5 million. And again, even at the time, everybody knew it, but nobody talked about it. And he's kind of the first one that puts it out there. And like, yeah, everybody knows it. It's kind of, you know, worst kept secret. Again, not saying that that was the number for Dillon or the number for any of these quarterbacks that have transferred. But again, it is a completely different landscape than it once was. Jimmy, a conversation we were having, you called it, again, recruiting, transfer portal, NIL, it is in many ways free agency in the NFL, or I would even go further and say the MLB, because there is no salary cap. Again, one of the things that people were like, hey, why is my school, why is Alabama, why is Ohio State paying this much for this player? Because they can. Money is about unlimited if they want it to be. Ohio State, Alabama, Georgia, Oregon, Nebraska, if they have a player that the Coach Rhule, Coach DeBoer, Coach Day says, we need this guy, Caleb Downs, we need this guy, hey, somebody's going to write a check. And there is no limit to how much. Again, NFL, you've got a salary cap. You got to stay under it. MLB, again, look what the Dodgers have done. Look what the Yankees traditionally do. Look what these top spending teams do. Again, it creates less maybe competitive balance. Again, who can, I don't think anybody's arguing here that the competitive balance in the NCAA for Power 5 schools isn't already a little bit skewed. Go pay him and go bring him in and play him, because, again, if it's going to help you win, it's going to help you win. And that's at the end of the day what everybody cares about the most of all. Just win, baby. A little shout out to Al Davis for that one. Where do you think college football is going maybe in the short term? Do we see major changes, major regulations coming, or is it going to be a slow moving train that slowly, you know, has stuff happen over the next couple of years?
You know, I think it's going to be a slow moving train just until they can figure out what works best for both the programs as well as the players. It's I mean, like you mentioned, Rod, it you have all these people who can write off checks in order for a program to get the players that they desperately want. Say like a guy like, I mean, I'm just throwing this out, a guy like Kyle McCord for him to go over to Syracuse, you know, and I'm sure he had plenty of other options. But I mean, Syracuse is one of those programs who love football, but I mean, and I know Fran Brown's going to get them back to where they belong. And, but right now, speaking about Nebraska, I mean, you want to talk about a fan base that is passionate about their football, and they will do whatever they need to in order to be successful again, like the Tom Osborne days. I mean, they will do it. They will do it. And just the football up in the Midwest, it's fantastic. It's fantastic. It's some of the best football, the Big Ten football. And so, I mean, Big Ten football is trying to get on par with SEC football. And you know what SEC football does in terms of the money that they can generate year in and year out. So we'll see what happens. I mean, right now it's a slow moving train, and I know some coaches get frustrated by it. I mean, especially coaches like Nick Saban, who probably couldn't deal with it anymore before he was recruiting players just to recruit players to keep them in their program. But when you constantly have other programs come calling for your kids within your program, say, hey, listen, we can offer you this. When the kid
probably... No, that never happened. Only when they said their name was in the portal.
Only when the kid's name was in the portal. But when your name's in the portal officially, I mean, that's when you get a bunch of offers, and now a kid that you spent 2 years developing and he's not in your program anymore. I mean, it's tough.
Yeah, Neil, what do you think again on the? Again, from the organizational side, again, everybody acknowledges something's got to change. Something's got to give. What do you think gives?
Well, what do I think gives? I think the NCAA gives first. I think that I don't know we have the NCAA within 5 years, maybe sooner. I don't think anyone's really putting any kind of accountability or pressure on the P5 conferences. I think they do pretty much what they want to do. I don't know that the federal government's going to come up with a solution anytime soon. There's a number of bills kind of winding their way through Congress, but I don't think there's any real mandate to get anything done there. And I don't see a real schedule for anything happening anytime soon. And then again, at NCAA, I would like to think they've got some say in all this, but they haven't so far. And we have chaos right now.
Yeah.
And you see, I think most people agree. Nick Saban's probably still in Tuscaloosa, if not for the situation we have now.
Yep.
And so I don't think anything's going to change anytime soon, especially given that there's still, I mean, I've been here for 2 years, there's going to be donor fatigue at schools. There's no donor, I mean, the numbers are going up. So maybe there's some donor fatigue at certain schools, but it's not across the board. And I think everyone realizes this is how you win, this is how you get players. To some degree, this is fascinating. I mean, it's fascinating to see all the movement out of Tuscaloosa. I mean, they didn't bring in some unproven coach. They brought in Kalen DeBoer, I mean, a guy who was in the CFP. And still you're seeing marquee players leaving the program. I mean, it's fascinating. And I think to some degree it's good for college football because it never leaves the headlines.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I guess there's compelling reasons. Despite the fact that there is chaos, there's compelling reasons you can't keep it this way.
Yeah.
So I don't think anyone is really in a super big hurry for this to happen, and I don't see it happening at least in the next 2 years. Yeah. I mean, sometimes things come together quickly, but I'd be surprised if we see any resolution, any of this stuff anytime soon. Now, the one factor in this, and we've talked about this before, and I'm praying it's true, I think this is the last class with the free COVID year. And that's created as much instability as anything else. I mean, just throwing that extra year in there in the mix is a crazy thing. And I think hopefully once that's done, then there will be some order restored. But as long as a player can say, well, hey, I'll stick around for one year, my free agent year, and make some money, then it is going to be kind of crazy. We're going to see fewer players leaving for the draft. So hopefully that's come to an end. But again, I can't even get a straight answer. And I've talked to a lot of people about this. Some people say this is the last year, and some say next year is the last year.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I mean, the federal government can't run our country. So I think we need to keep them out of college football. it's interesting. Yeah. Again, you've got your big schools, Ohio State. Again, I went to grad school there. I believe they have 32 varsity sports that are essentially all funded by what they make from their football program. Again, if you want to say Ohio State basketball breaks even. So again, as soon as you start taking away, again, the, again, Alabama football, Georgia football, as soon as they split from the NCAA, they can do whatever they want with that money. All of a sudden you're talking about how do you keep any other sport? So then you get into Title IX stuff. So nobody, no AD is really pushing it because again, they know what life is going to mean for all the rest of the sports, the rest of their student athletes. Again, you've got head coaches who, again, they're making plenty of money in this situation. Coach Harbaugh is out front talking about, you know, revenue sharing. Again, that would be a whole conversation. As soon as there's revenue sharing, there's got to be some kind of collective bargaining agreement. So again, you're talking NFL minor, NCAA, you know, players association that's football only. Again, so now you do that, and now do these football players go to school at the school anymore? It is a tangled web that is going to be hard to untangle. Maybe it never gets untangled. Maybe you cut one string at a time, see what happens. Time will tell. People love drama. It's hard to look away from a train wreck, and that is largely what is happening right now. People love it. Like you said, it's good for ratings, right? It's good for ratings. It is the best. Sports is the best, you know, reality TV there is. That is why I think I saw the top 100 broadcasts, 99 of them were football related in the last year. Again, football's in fine shape. Again, a lot of stuff around the edges. Everybody will continue to polish it up. But again, creates lots of good conversations. Again, if anybody's out there listening and needs a 3-man panel, again, we're all right here. Again, Jay Noel 423 on X, Neil Stratton at Inside the League. I'm at Right Step ADV. We'd be happy to sit down. You can fly us out, you know, wine us and dine us, and you know, we'll have a conversation about where we think all this stuff needs to go. You know, we'll have that conversation. It'll be a lot of fun to do that. So let's get to championship game predictions. Neil, you already spilled the beans. You think the Ravens are going to knock off the Chiefs. Is that right?
I think the Ravens have what it takes. I think Lamar Jackson's a really hard quarterback to contain. And despite the fact that the Chiefs have probably more going on offense than they've had in the past, I think the Chiefs have the Ravens have a lot of momentum. I think they've got it everywhere they need it. And I mean, I think a lot of y'all saw the Niners game Monday night earlier this season. That was as impressed as I've been about one team in a long time. But my only issue was with the Texans kind of sneak up on them because they had that week off, and sometimes that gets you out of your routine, your momentum, etc. But that was shown conclusively to me that was not the case. I think the Ravens have a real good shot at being the Chiefs. And we're not talking about the NFC yet, just the AFC right now, right?
Yeah, just hit the AFC. What do you think, Jimmy?
Yeah, to be honest, I'm going with the Ravens. I mean, for as well as Kansas City played last week, the Niners are – I mean, not the Niners. The Ravens are playing really good football now. Just in terms of – I mean, especially Lamar Jackson playing at an MVP level, I think he'll be the MVP in the next couple of be named the MVP. So – defensively, I mean, it's top five defense. Coach McDonald has that defense playing lights up football, and they were able to stop a red hot Houston team with CJ Stroud. You know what I mean? So, I mean, Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce, they're a tough duo to stop, but I mean, I think the Ravens are able to get it done this weekend defensively. So,
man, as much as I want to lean into the Chiefs, I'm just having a really hard time with it just because of that receiving core. Again, I trust Andy Reid. I trust Coach Spagnuolo. I trust Patrick Mahomes. Lamar Jackson showed up and proved that he can do it last week. Now, the Chiefs, again, they know how to win. They know how to get it done. They had a great game plan last year against Jalen Hurts when that Eagles team was rolling to win it all. Again, there's so many things that want to make me push to the Chiefs. But again, like you said, at the end of the day, this is a really, really talented roster on both sides for the Ravens. And I would say a little more complete than the Chiefs at this point. Again, with what they invested at the wide receiver spot, with what they've invested on the defensive side. Again, even barring some of the injuries that they've had over there, really, really good team. I think it's going to be a really close game. Again, Lamar Jackson, this is a game he's got to win. He's got to get the Steve Young monkey off his back. Jimmy, you hit it. He's the MVP. It's hard for me to, you know, make an argument for any other player over him at this point. So I think he gets it done. I think we're all on the same page. I think the Ravens make it in, and have the chance to go for it all. What about on the NFC side, the 49ers and the Lions? Again, I think it's going to be another really fun matchup. Neil, what do you think on that one?
I think it's going to be an upset here. I think I was a little surprised Tampa hung with the Niners as much as they did. The Packers Nine. Got hung with the Niners as long there as they go. Did in San Francisco. And I think the Lions have a lot of momentum. They've got a lot of things going for them. And I think they match up well. I mean, they're stronger against the run than they are against the pass. Right now, Brock Purdy he's not the same quarterback he was the first half of the season. And I think if they can really slow down Christian McCaffrey and kind of put all their resources towards that and make Purdy beat him, I think they may be able to do enough on offense to win that game. I think the Lions are playing really well, running the ball as well as passing the ball. I'm on Ross St. Brown. I was not a big fan going into the season. I am now. I've seen the light. And so I think the Lions have what it takes to make that happen. I don't know what the line is. Does anyone know what the line is in this game?
I do not.
Yeah, I don't know. It's got to be. I would guess it's close. But I would guess the Niners are favored. I think the Lions pulled the upset.
That's a good one. You know what? I'm still wrestling about this. I'm leaning towards San Francisco right now just because, I mean, for as gifted as the Lions offense is, I mean, they are banged up up front with Jonah Jackson and Frank right now. And that defensive line for the 49ers, I mean, that is a tough group to stop. And so I want to say Lions just because of the offensive weapons that they have on the outside. And I know that they could put some pressure on the DBs for the Niners, but just that defensive line is going to create havoc for Jared Goff with a banged up offensive line. So I'll probably go lean that way. And then Brock Purdy, he's got to be consistent with the football. He's got to play good football, not be Superman, but not make those costly turnovers just like he was doing in the first half of the year. So I'm going to lean towards the Niners. But I don't say that very confidently.
That means it's going to be a close game. I'm looking at CBS Sports. They have Niners at -7. That's obviously not official. That's like, I'm with you, Neil, much bigger than I thought it'd be. Again, both of you guys make great points. I was a 49ers to the Super Bowl in the preseason. I thought they would have made the change at quarterback by now and had my guy Sam Darnold playing there. Again, two really interesting teams. The Lions, you know you're going to get nothing held back, right? Again, fourth downs, fakes, again, how many trick plays? We're going to see at least four or five. We're going to see some kind of wrinkle we haven't seen all year. Aiden Hutchinson, one of the most fun players to watch. Again, still can't believe he didn't go #1 overall. On the flip side, again, you've got, again, in my opinion, the best head coach in the NFL, Kyle Shanahan. You've got creativity. You've got a really, you know, 1 through 52, maybe the best roster in the NFL. Again, your quarterback is, again, we're all sitting here acknowledged, elite leader, elite intangibles, elite game manager. He has to hit some of those throws that he could not hit against Green Bay that would have extended the lead a little bit and kept it from being so close in the fourth quarter. I think the 49ers still find a way to get this game. Deebo Samuel's injury. Have you guys seen anything on that? What day to day, I believe, was the last I saw for him.
Last I heard as well. I think he's in a lot of pain. It's going to be a pain management issue.
Yeah. So if he plays, it's a different offense. Again, as soon as he goes down, things change a little bit for that offense. Again, Kyle's going to have a plan for that. Kyle is as good an offensive mind as there is in the NFL in terms of, you know, scheming everything up. Again, you can see what it's done to teams like the Dolphins, obviously Green Bay and, you know, his former protege and Coach LaFleur up there. I'm going to go with the 49ers in this one as well. I think we'll get a 49ers versus Ravens matchup. It's going to be a really good game. Again, maybe he'll pull the card and throw Sam Darnold out there and just make me even more right from my preseason prediction. I'll have to send a text to Kyle and see if I can make it happen. You know, all joking aside there, but you know, it's going to be two really fantastic games. I think both these games have, you know, the makeup to be good four quarter games. A lot of highlight plays. Again, you're going to get big explosives from CMC, from Lamar Jackson. You're going to have Patrick Mahomes do something crazy. And you're going to have two really fun edge rushers getting after Jared Goff and Chase Young and Bosa. So really fun games to watch. Again, excited for both of those. We'll see where they all end up, and you know, we'll have some Super Bowl talk before it all goes. We will not be on Super Bowl row come Super Bowl time. Unfortunately, I'm not going to even apply for my credential. I want to stay far away from that circus, but we will be at the All-Star Games coming up. Neil, you are headed to East West on Friday, correct?
Yeah, Friday. Workouts begin Saturday. I'll be there for both teams on Saturday, and then may stick around for the morning workouts on Sunday. They start really early. I think they start at 8:15 with the first team. I'm not sure East or West, but yeah. So I'll get to see a little bit of that. I mean, I've talked about in the past the frustration that the Shrine game and the Senior Bowl overlap now, but it is what it is. So yeah, come back Sunday, wash some clothes, and then head to Mobile on Monday.
Perfect. And Neil and I will both be down in Mobile for the week. I'll get there Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. Neil will be down there as well. Make sure you come find us at some point. I think we might have to find a quiet corner, do a little talking on All-Star Game wrap-up. We will be recording from down there. Would love to hear from you. Of course, you can reach out to Neil, his website, InsideTheLeague.com, or on X at InsideTheLeague. Jimmy, it's been fantastic to have you on. I'm sure hopefully we'll have a chance again. But then again, I think maybe not. I hope you get back in it. A guy that is very talented from a personnel side, again, understands the game on the pro side, the college side. Again, Jay Noel, 423. Jimmy, thanks for being on with us.
Guys, I appreciate you guys having me on. It's been great talking to you guys, and especially talking to football. This week going to be a fun weekend of games, and I hope you guys enjoy it. And then obviously safe travels with your All-Star games. And if you guys are going out to the combine, travel safe. Hope to see you guys then. But once again, thank you guys.
Yeah, just three dudes talking football. Again, we probably have no idea what we're actually talking about, but again, you can decide. Hit us, find us on X. Of course, I'm at RightStepADV, my website, rsafootball.com. Again, there's going to be lots of stuff still hitting this week. Injury updates, lines are going to be moving. We'll find out where everything goes this weekend. Hopefully, weather doesn't affect any games, weather doesn't affect any travel. But with footballs on TV, don't just watch the game, keep on scouting.